Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 31 is, of course, very familiar to all of us. It is the conclusion to the entire book of Proverbs. And it's the words of King Lemuel that his mother taught him. Now the issue is whether verses 1 through 9 are simply the words that he was taught by his mother, or whether the final part, verses 10 through 31, were also taught to him by his mother, and there's no indication to suggest otherwise. So the whole chapter seems to be the teaching of a mother to her son, a son who turns out to be a regal man. We're not going to spend too much time on the first part. In fact, we're not going to spend any time on the first part. Instead, we're going to jump right into Proverbs 31 because we want to get down to the application section this evening. So on your outline, the first question we want to ask is a general question. How does Proverbs 31 fit into the whole thrust of the book of Proverbs? And this issue is raised because some people have decided, well, the book of Proverbs is about the fear of the Lord. And when you look at the introduction, chapters 1 through 9, it is about wisdom. And wisdom is personified as a beautiful woman. We see that in chapter 1, verses 22 through 33. We see that again in chapter 8, where wisdom speaks again as a woman. We see it again in chapter 9. So there are three discourses of wisdom speaking personified as a woman. And now we come to the end of the book. And we see this woman who seems too incredible to even exist. And so some people have suggested that what is told us at the end of the book is another personification of wisdom. Probably that's not the way we should take it, because first of all, it's not presented that way. But it is the conclusion to the book. And the very last thing that is said in the book is, charm is deceitful and beauty is fleeting, but the woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. That drives us back to the front of the book. Chapter 1, verse 7, part of the introduction, the last verse in the introduction to the book, where Solomon writes, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." And then again at the end of the introduction, in chapter 9 and verse 10, Solomon writes, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding." Then when we come to the end of the book, we discover this woman who fears the Lord. And so it seems to be a kind of inclusio, but now encapsulated in a real person. And of course, when we look at Proverbs 31, the emphasis is just on that fact. Whatever this woman does flows from the fact that she is a woman who fears the Lord. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom or knowledge. Solomon is telling us that the fear of the Lord is the fountainhead from which all knowledge flows. And since the book of Proverbs is about wisdom, not just wisdom in terms of an intellectual sense in giving wonderful proverbs, but wisdom in terms of how to live life skillfully, then living life skillfully starts with the fear of the Lord. Proverbs 31, 10 through 13, point B, is an acrostic. So in its 22 lines, Each line starts with a successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And the question is, why does the writer write that way? Well, certainly, Proverbs is a book full of poetry and aphorisms. And so it's artistic. And we need to remember that God made us not just engineers and mathematicians, but he made his world beautiful, and he made people artistic like he is. And oftentimes we overlook the way the Bible is written because we're so concerned about the content. But the content is presented to us in a beautiful form. And of course, that's very appropriate then when we're talking in the end about the excellent wife, to present it in a beautiful form. Acrostics are also used. There are 5 or 6 in the Psalms. Acrostics are used so that people have an easier time memorizing Scripture. We forget how easy it is for us to pick up a Bible and read. But in Solomon's day, of course, there were not copies of the Bible floating around. So what people knew, they knew by heart. So to make it easier to memorize was a key to some of the writings. But then there's a third reason why it may be written in an acrostic fashion, and that is when you encompass the total Hebrew alphabet, you go, as we would say, from A to Z. We don't think of it in terms of Hebrew, but in Greek we say that the Lord is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. So that Proverbs 31, if it's the A to Z of the excellent wife, that tells us here that we have the total woman. Seems like there was a book written like that some time back. I don't think it's a book Christians probably are reading. But here we are in Proverbs chapter 31, and here we have the picture of a total woman. The woman from A to Z. She's not going to be as idealistic as she may seem at the first by the time we're done. So that Solomon, I should say Lemuel's mother, really, is not suggesting this sort of woman cannot be found, nor is she suggesting that any woman cannot become this kind of wife. It's here because we ought to aspire to it. The word excellent in the beginning, an excellent wife who can find, is also found again in the end. So it's used twice. And it's a word that is translated differently by different writers in the Old Testament. And it is used most often in terms of warriors. A better translation than excellent would be something like valiant, capable, strong. So if you would, look at verses 10 through 12. An excellent wife who can find, for her worth is far above jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of his life. And then just glance down to verse 28. Her children rise up and bless her, her husband also. And he praises her, saying, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. You can see that it starts out with the excellent wife, and then as her husband praises her, he says, many daughters have done excellently. It's the same word, nobly. Or many daughters are valiant, but you excel them all. You do better than all of them. So when we look at verses 10 through 12, and then 28 through 31, we see three words in the introduction and three words in the conclusion. We see the word husband, the word wife, and the word excellent or valiant. And in the book of Proverbs, the word for husband is not your typical Hebrew word for husband. In this case, the word is Baal, and it means master or lord or owner. And the word that is used for woman is not the typical word that you would find in Hebrew for wife, but it is the word that comes from Genesis chapter 2, verse 23. This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, Isha, because she came from man, Ish. So even though this poem is an acrostic, it at the same time has an internal structure to it. And the structure highlights certain aspects of what the writer wants us to know. I'm buzzing up here. Now, what we see in this particular passage, we also see in other scriptures. So turn to the pastoral epistles. Turn to 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 9. Paul is talking about the support of widows. He says, let a widow be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one husband, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work, but refused to put younger widows on the list, for when they feel sensual desires in disregard of Christ, they want to get married, thus incurring condemnation because they have set aside their previous pledge. And at the same time, they also learn to be idle, as they go around from house to house, and not merely idle, but also gossips and busybodies, talking about things not proper to mention. Therefore, I want younger widows to get married, bear children, keep house, and give the enemy no occasion for reproach. So notice, as you think through Proverbs chapter 31, you will find similar topics. And particularly the word here is keep house. And this word is a Greek word that's comprised of two different words, house and despot. So the woman is, in a sense, the master of the house. Then turn to Titus chapter 2. Verse 3. Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, nor enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good, that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, the word is sober-minded, to be sober-minded, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be dishonored. Workers at home, in this case, is a little different word than 1 Timothy. It's the word from house and the word from work. So you can see that the subject matter in these passages is very similar. Back to Proverbs 31. I've given you this handout. There are all kinds of outlines for Proverbs 31. And I've given you two of the ones that I thought were better outlines. I don't intend to go through them in detail. The first one is a chiasm, an extended chiasm. And at the center of the chiasm is verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. So if that chiasm is an appropriate chiasm, then the emphasis at the center of the chiasm is what the woman's life does for her husband, how she enhances his reputation. Now, of course, that makes me think of 1 Corinthians. Let's turn there. 1 Corinthians chapter 11. We've been here just about every week, I think. 1 Corinthians 11, 7. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and the glory of God, but the woman is the glory of the man. For the man does not originate from the woman, but the woman from the man. For indeed, man was not created for the woman's sake, but the woman for the man's sake. And the key is in verse 7, where Paul uses the word glory twice. That is the theme he wants to develop. And he's saying, whatever a head covering is, it's not appropriate for a man to wear it because a man is showing off God's glory. That is, he's a demonstration of what God has done in his life. The head covering, whatever it is appropriate for the woman because when we meet together for the purpose of worshiping God, it is not time for the man's glory to be shown off. And so it comes back to that theme that we've been stressing. The man is put at the head of the marriage, and as goes the husband, so goes the wife. Now, of course, that's a principle, and it's not always the case. We can find then, as we'll see next week in 1 Peter chapter 7, where you can have a godly husband who is doing things correctly, but he has an ungodly wife. But generally speaking, as goes the husband, so goes the wife. So as you look at Proverbs 31, and you remember, now wait a minute, this is really not addressed to women. It's a mother's teaching to her son. And she's saying, look, here's the kind of woman you want. And this kind of woman promotes your reputation in the community. But of course, it's circular. The reason she promotes it is because he's the kind of husband that he ought to be. So when you look at that first outline, Roman numeral 2 of Proverbs 31, the emphasis falls on verse 23. If you're interested, you can find that in the New American Commentary on Proverbs. The second outline is the outline that I think is preferable, although in many senses it's not really that different. So the second outline has an introduction, has a body, and has a conclusion. And you'll notice that in the body, there are three sections. One section from verses 13 to 18, and then one verse, verse 19, and then verses 20 through 27. And verses 13 through 18 stress the woman's cottage industry, and then verses 20 through 27 stress what comes forth from her cottage industry, if we could put it that way. So one is stressing her work, and one is stressing the social implications of her work. And right in the middle is verse 19, which I'd like you to look at. Verse 19 says, she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. Now, in the New American Standard Bible, you cannot tell that there's a difference in the words here. But there are two different words used for one, for hand, I should say. One is stretching out the hand. The other is an open hand with reference to the palm. So let's read it that way. She stretches out her hand to the distaff, and her palms grasp the spindle. Then verse 20, reading it properly, she extends her palms to the needy and stretches out her hands to, I read that wrong, she stretches out her palms to the poor and she stretches forth her hands to the needy. And so there is a mini chiasm right in the middle. And what is the point of it? The point is, the author is giving us a wonderful kind of pun. He's talking about her, in verse 19, stitching, her sewing, but by that very term, he's sewing the two halves of what he has to say about her together. So he draws the first half to the second half with verse 19. So having said that, let's just make some comments then as we work our way through. First, the introduction in verses 12 through and verses 10 through 12. An excellent wife, a valiant wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. So this valiant woman whom he's going to describe is a woman who is scarce. These kind of women are hard to find. So hard to find that their worth is far above jewels. So what Lemuel's mother is saying is, the bride price, you cannot pay enough to get this kind of bride. If you think, for example, of Abraham's servant who went to get a bride for Isaac, what did he do? He pulled out of his bags clothing and jewels. And Lemuel's mother is saying, this kind of woman is worth more than the bride price. Of course, in a country like India, where you still pay a price, in this case, the woman pays it to the man, the bigger the price, the better the match. The more money you can produce, the more educated man you can get. I'm sure it's quite like that in the Old Testament too. So that you match a wealthy girl with a wealthy guy, an educated girl with an educated guy. But Lemuel's mother is saying, no, when it comes to the kind of gal I'm talking about, this valiant woman who's like a warrior hero of the Old Testament, she's scarce. Her worth is far more than the bride price. And she gives us a sense of why that worth is more than the bride price in verses 11 and 12. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Now, the word gain is the word that's used in the Old Testament for spoil from a war. In fact, several of the words in Proverbs 31 have a warrior imagery. Obviously, this kind of wife is not a warrior, but she's being compared with that kind of hero. So this man can trust in her completely, and she will bring him no lack of spoil, which the body of the poem is going to describe to us, how she, in her domestic affairs, supplies for her household and for her husband. So he can completely trust in her because she's on his side, working for him, bringing him the spoil of her diligent work. She does him good and no evil all the days of his life. Now, we could talk about trust here, that there's that kind of trust where she will not commit immorality. And of course, that would be true, but that's not what the text is talking about. We could extend the principle that far. And does him good and not evil, we could talk about the way she speaks about him in public. And of course, that would be true, but that's not what the text is talking about either. It's expanding the idea of gain. She is a hard-working woman who brings gain to her husband, and she doesn't harm him financially all the days of her life. Then when we look at verses 13 through 27, we come to the body of this poem, dividing into two parts, with a stitch seam in the center. The first part stressing her cottage industry in two sections, verses 13 through 15 and verses 16 through 18. Look at verse 13. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She rises also while it is still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maidens. So the first thing we see about this woman is she will go find wool and flax. And that wool and flax is going to be what she uses to make thread, to make clothing. And she works with delight. I think that's a big emphasis there in verse 12. She's a joyful worker. And then verse 14 shows us that she is like a merchant ship. Well, merchant ships, of course, cross the seas, and they bring back for sale all kinds of delectable things from other countries. This woman, for her household, is not just economical, but she also provides dainties from other places. It's not just meat and potatoes. It's frog legs and things like that. And in providing for her household, taking care of it, we're told that she rises while it is still night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. Of course, this is a wealthy woman. And in her household, she has servants who do a lot of the work for her. But verse 15 then looks like she gets up at the crack of dawn to organize the day. So she may not be the actual person setting food on the table for her household, but she's making sure it's done. And The word portions probably is not a reference to food, but it's a reference to giving her maidens their duties for the day. So this woman is highly organized. Verses 16 through 18 go together. She considers a field and buys it. From the earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. There's the verse, I think, that bothers some people. Her lamp does not go out at night. She gets up while it's still night, and then at night her lamp doesn't go out. And what kind of person is like that except an idiot college student? The rest of us have grown beyond that. So the point in verses 15, 6, or 16, 17, and 18 is she's domestic, is for her house, but she's also quite good out there buying land and reselling it to make a profit to plant a vineyard. And verse 17 is telling us that she personally, even though an aristocratic woman, gets out there and does some gardening. She plants the vineyard. She girds herself with strength. It actually says she girds her loins with strength. So it's that picture from the New Testament of girding up your loins to do some work. She girds her loin with strength and makes her arms strong. It's literal. She's a working woman. She's not going to the office all decked out, sitting at a desk as a secretary. She's at home, and she's saying, hey, if I buy this piece of land and I sell it, that will allow me to acquire this vineyard and plant it. Now, if I'm going to plant it, I got to be a capable, strong woman. Now, I don't know how many of you women are strong, but my woman is strong. She can till a garden. You know what tillers are like? She's pretty strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out at night. Now, we scholars have discovered in some of the writings that this expression, her lamp does not go out at night, probably is a reference to the fact that she doesn't have any lack of money. That is, most houses, you would have to put the lights out at night because you didn't have enough money to supply oil to the lamp. But in this house, there was enough money so that the lamp could be lit all night. You know, kind of your night light kind of thing. And that comes from her gain. So we're not only talking then about a man who, we'll see in a minute, sits in the gates, and obviously he's providing for his family. But this woman, because of her industry, because of the way she takes care of things, she also adds to the family. And then verse 19 gives us that stitch. With the flax and wool, she stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hands, palms, grasp the spindle. I was reading Nancy Wilson's book called Praise Her in the Gates. You would think that that would be an exposition of Proverbs 31, but it is not. It's Nancy Wilson's scriptural ramblings. But she's making a case for women being domestic. Whatever that means. And obviously, over time, it means different things. But if we move back years and years, we can see that women had a much harder life. And of course, no one is wishing a harder life on women. But they had a much harder life. If you travel, such as in India, when you're out in the villages, you don't just run down to the grocery store and pick up your chicken and come home. Getting meals prepared for the day is an all-day event. And doing laundry, you don't just cram it into a washing machine, you beat it out on a rock. It's hard work. And what has happened in our times, and this is true of men too, so I'm not just saying this about women, our lives have become easy enough that we're faced with the problem that Paul's talking about with young widows. We've become idle. And our goal is to work less, to be idle more. Idle for what? For the purpose of more entertainment and relaxation and leisure, as opposed to working less for the purpose of working more for Christ. So our idleness is endangering our godliness. This woman was anything but idle. Verses 20 through 27, then, are the second half. And the second half really looks at the product of what she does. And verses 21 through 25 are another chiasm within this section. And you can see on your sheet of paper that at the center of that chiasm falls once again verse 23. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. And remember, sitting in the gate meant that you were a man of reputation who was counted worthy to be a leader of the city and a judge in disputes that came to the city gates. So this woman, by the way she lives, causes her husband to be known in the gates. And verses 20 through 27 then have that as the stress. And you can see as you follow on your outline there that this is really a chiasm. Particularly verses 21 through 25. Verses 19 and 20 seem to reflect verses 26 through 27. So notice verse 20 says, she extends her hands to the poor, and she stretches out her hands to the needy. And remember, back in 1 Timothy chapter 5, the woman who was put on the list to be supported by the church because she has no relatives to support her, is a woman who helped people in distress. This woman has something to offer because she's been working hard. So Grace came home today and told me that there was a particular lady that came to the church who needed help. And Grace said, well, I gave her such and such coupons. You'll all get a chuckle out of that. These aren't the same kind of coupons, though. These are those $4 off your next purchase, as many as you want to use at once at the grocery store. So it was like cash, except you could only use it at the grocery store. Where did those come from? They came from my valiant wife's labor at Albertsons. It takes about 5 hours every Saturday morning. Drives me nuts, but it benefits us immensely. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. Look down at verse 25. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the future. So you see how verse 25 goes with verse 21. She's not afraid. She laughs. Her household is clothed with scarlet. She's clothed with strength and dignity. So she is a woman who is prepared for the future. She has no fear because of that, and she is taking care of her family's clothing. The word scarlet would suggest that it's expensive clothing. Kleidermachenleute. Anybody know what that means? Clothes make the man. But there's a possibility that the word means double thick. So it could be that she smiles or she's not afraid of the snow because she's prepared double thick clothing. Verse 22. She makes coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Now I'll turn back to Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7 is about the adulterous woman who is luring the naive person. Verse 16. I have spread my couch with coverings, with colored linens of Egypt. I have sprinkled my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us drink our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with caresses. Verse 16, I have spread my couch with coverings. Back to Proverbs 31, verse 22. She makes coverings for herself. Most now agree that should be translated because it's the same as verse 16. She makes coverings for her bed. And then the second half of the verse talks about how she clothes herself. She clothes herself with fine linen and purple. So she covers her bed. Another way of putting that is she's like the adulteress of Proverbs 7, but of course she's married and she's faithful to her husband, so she is making her bedroom a delight, and in addition, she makes herself well clothed with linen and purple, purple being a sign of royalty. Verse 24, she makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies belts to the tradesmen. You can see how that then kind of parallels verse 22. And then finally, verses... We have 15 minutes left. Right on time. Verses 26 and 27. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household. That's a word for being a watchman. She watches well over her house and does not eat the bread of idleness. So in conclusion, because of this woman's hard labor, she is not an idle person, but oversees her entire household. And at the same time, she teaches with wisdom and teaches with kindness. And then paralleling verses 10 through 12 are verses 28 through 31. First, the praise of her family, verses 28 and 29. Her children rise up and bless her. Her husband is the one who speaks. Her husband also, and he praises her, saying, many daughters have done valiantly, but you exceed them all. And then general praise. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her the product of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. And then when you think of 1 Timothy chapter 5 and the older women, who's put on the list? Someone who is well known for what? Good works. So when we talk about husbands, and we say, well, husbands are responsible for everything, they're the head of the family. When we talk about wives, we spent one lesson on submission. But this is really attendant to submission. That is, the wife works with her husband by being the one who's domestic, bearing children, taking care of the house, teaching her family, taking care of needy people, supplying all the needs that her family has in terms of their domestic life. It takes us back to Genesis chapter 3, where the woman is cursed in terms of children, because that's where her life is going to be, and the man is cursed in terms of his provision, because that's where his life is going to be. And so there are implications. I think, out of the passage. And the first one is the fear of the Lord. The kind of woman that gains praise biblically is not the woman who is externally charming and externally beautiful. It's very clear that charm is deceptive. Some people are very charming, but inwardly they're ravenous wolves. And it's very clear that beauty is fleeting. You're not going to be at 40 what you were at 22. It just isn't going to happen, even though our world's working hard to make it happen. So as charm and beauty disappear, the one thing that will never disappear is the fear of the Lord. Think then of the money and time that is expended on beautification. And think of the littleness of time that is put forth for learning to fear the Lord. So the Proverbs 31 woman is what she is for one simple reason. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and everything else flows from that. Second implication, an excellent wife who can find. Such people are rare. Proverbs is written to men. If it were written to women, we would say, well, a man like this is hard to find too. Because it's hard to find people who fear the Lord. And those who fear the Lord, out of fear of the Lord comes the fruit of the Holy Spirit. So the kind of Christian character that we all laud is what comes from fearing the Lord. So if we lack that Christian character, and the place to look for it is not in church on Sunday, not when we're with our friends, the place to look is at home. Like McGee says, where the rubber meets the road. At home, are we loving and joyful and at peace and kind and gentle and self-controlled? My guess is most of us are far more that way in public than we are in private. Thirdly, this woman is completely trustworthy. I wrote down here in my notes, because of the word gain, she spoils her husband. Nice little pun there. She's completely trustworthy because she's working with her husband, not against. So all of her labors at home and out in the community that are for the home are advancing the home. She's not at home saying, hey, my time's free to do whatever I want to. Oh, let's go shop till we drop today. That's not her attitude. So her husband has complete trust in her. A fourth implication. She is a hard worker, and she works hard joyfully. Again, the test of our character comes, you know, when we're working. It's easy to be joyful when you're sitting, drinking a nice cold glass of iced tea, eating armadillo eggs. It's easy to be joyful then, but the question is, when you're doing a job, is it easy? And this woman was a hard worker, and the text tells us she was joyful while she was working. She did it gladly. And remember, she's the kind of woman who was concerned about both economy and luxury. She's the kind of woman that was concerned about being a good manager. She was the kind of woman who knows how to buy and sell. And she's the kind of woman that was physically fit. A fifth implication is she's domestic in her perspective. Some people say, well, this woman went out into the work world, but I don't think that's the case. She went out and bought a piece of land and she sold it and made a profit. But everything she was doing was for her family. And you're left with the sense from the passage that her time is spent working around the household with her children. And again, we see that in terms of her management and how she's prepared for the future. She takes care of her family in terms of clothing. She takes care of her family in terms of food. She takes care of her husband in terms of her clothing. She takes care of her husband in terms of their desirable repose. And in addition, she is a constant teacher. Wisdom and kindness flow from her mouth. Another implication is that she's generous to needy people. And remember 1 Timothy chapter 5, she helped those who were in distress. G, she edifies by what she has to say, because she speaks with wisdom and she speaks with graciousness and kindness. She lives in such a way that when people look at her, they say, that guy must be some kind of guy for this woman to live like this. She's the kind of woman whose children appreciate her. And she's the kind of woman, when people look at her, they know her for her works. 1 Timothy chapter 2, where women are told to dress modestly and that it should be their works that identify them. Well then, three statements at the end. We must prepare our daughters to be like this. Movies, soccer, football, baseball, all those things don't make this kind of woman. Second, we must encourage our sons to find such women. That means the church, along with other churches, better be supplying. And then finally, what does it mean about working out there in the work world? Well, I don't think we can say something dogmatically about women in the work world. Obviously, there are periods in a woman's life when she can be out there holding down a job. But there are other times, like when she has young children, where Proverbs 31 teaches us she needs to be at home taking care of her family and advancing her household in that manner. And we're fooling ourselves if we think there are not ramifications from leaving our kids at daycare, particularly if we have an option. This is quite a woman. But you know what? I think I'm married to her. That's bound for it.
Father, the picture we look at is not a very popular picture in our culture today. And both in our culture and in the church,